How do companies create a culture and core values that employees actually live out? The team at The Receptionist, a bootstrapped Denver-based software company, sets out to answer that very question. Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. You're listening to part 5 of 5 of our Employee Supremacy series with Michael Ashford and Andy Alsop.
Well, Andy, we are back for episode 5 of this 5-part series. We're going to wrap things up here, and I hope everyone who's listening to this has gone back and listened to the previous 4 because I have loved the conversation. I've even learned throughout this entire time. So I am excited to wrap this up by talking about how companies can implement employee supremacy and start to maybe turn the dial down a little bit on shareholder supremacy. So let's start here as we launch into this final episode, Andy. What do you think the future of work looks like under an employee supremacy model? If more companies adopt this, what does it look like if this catches on?
Well, thought a lot about this. I think, you know, some of the difficulties, and I always do the contrast, right? In shareholder supremacy, you're trying to raise shareholder value. In a lot of cases, that means what you're doing is you have to focus on making sure your employees work as hard as they can. Well, in this new way of working and the future of work, which doesn't necessarily mean that we are working in an office any longer, there's this sort of, I use that example of letting go of the rock. You almost have to let go of the rock and believe and trust that your employees are doing what they need to do. And this has been really hard for some managers to do. So when you operate under employee supremacy, you're creating that trusting team. And then that trusting team is doing what needs to be done for the customer, for the business. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the methodologies we have, right? This is the model that you want to have when you're going into hybrid work environments and the future of work, because part of the great resignation is people realized when they were out of work and they couldn't work, hey, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
You know, so they went out and tried different things. Well, if you're in that environment, you want to create a company that is attractive to people who want to work with you, regardless of whether they're going to be in an office or not. But if you can give them that trusting space where they don't feel like they have to be in the office, where the managers don't feel like they have to be like looking over their shoulders and making sure everybody's doing the work, that's the future of work. That's the way things are going. So it fits the model perfectly, in my opinion.
From a culture development standpoint, how do you see this fitting in? Because at the same time, I think a lot of people were leaving their jobs because of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of those companies were operating under a shareholder supremacy, even if it wasn't necessarily labeled that. How do you think culture fits in, or what is the role of culture in this environment?
Without it, you can't run an employee supremacy company. Because some of the things that happen with an employee supremacy company is that you have to determine, I say this all the time, you have to determine who you want on the bus, right? And if you don't know what your core values are, you don't know what the culture is at your business, how do you bring those people onto the bus who belong on the bus, mm-hmm. who are going to be in the right seat, you know, and actually be the person that is the right person for the company? And without that, it's really hard to form that company that has those trusting relationships. So I can't emphasize it anymore. And I say this because I used to be like, core values, more values. I was like, they're just a bunch of stuff people put on the walls like we have, right? And what I realized after going through the exercises of some of the things we're going to talk about, which are critical components of this, is your core values are what allow you to determine how you run your company and the people who are also going to be there with you. And I actually did a study from before we actually adopted our core values and after we adopted our core values. Unfortunately, we have had to exit almost everybody that got hired before the core values. Mm-hmm. And after the core values, we have about a 95% retention of those people since then. I think that says something. If you don't know what your core values are, it's very difficult to get them on the bus. And then once they're on the bus, to get them aligned and going in the same direction.
What do you say to the people who might take what you just said and say something along the lines of, are you just trying to get people who all look and think and act like you do? Like you're basically creating clones of themselves, I should say, where you're not thinking about diversity. You're not thinking about diversity of thought, diversity of however you want to take that word, what would you say to somebody pushing back against you on that?
When I've said this, I've had some people say, it sounds like a cult, right? And okay, so maybe it's a little bit of a cult. I'm actually going to admit that. In the past, I've always been like defensive about that. No, it's not a cult. But really what you want to do is have people who are aligned. Now, it depends on what your core values are and how you operate the company, right? Ours are fun, authentic, bold, respectful, innovative, and collaborative. And when you look at that, nothing about that says, oh, we're only going to hire these type of people. I mean, there is one thing that I'll say, and that is for technology companies, of which we are, I don't believe that employee supremacy is solely for technology companies. I believe anybody can run under employee supremacy. But we are a technology company, and there's a little bit of a liberal bent, I have to say, to, you know, you look at any company, whether it's Slack or whatever else, do we end up attracting people who are on a liberal side? Maybe. But I don't want to be in a company that thinks only one way. We just had a great, you were part of that discussion.
Yeah.
We had a whole thing. At this point in time, there's a whole situation going on about Roe v. Wade. And we had an incredibly rich discussion that included members of the team and leadership. And we said, we don't want to be in a company that just all thinks the same. We want to be in a company with of diverse opinions. But what we want to do is respect them, right? Respect is the important part. So I hear people saying that, but I will say that it really comes down to how you run the company and what your core values are.
Then is employee supremacy all just about making better decisions? Is it as simple as that, or are we taking it down way too far?
I don't know. It's tough because how do you determine what a better decision is? What I know, what we've done over our journey is that we've gotten better over time, understanding what those decisions need to be. We understand now that we want to put the employee at the forefront and the focal point. We didn't run this way the whole time. It was only in the last year and a half that we've done that. So that's what's led to better decisions. Because once you put that focal point out there, then it's like, okay, well, you know, it's just like when you put a goal out in front of you and say, that's where I want to go. It's like the old analogy of, you know, how does a plane actually know how to get from New York to San Francisco, right? It might not be on course the whole time, but at least you know where you want to go. With our just cause and employee supremacy, we know where we want to go. That's what drives our decision. Are they better? Sometimes we make bad decisions, you know? But I believe that at least they're informed by where we want to get to.
I'm reminded in hearing you say that our last employee all hands meeting, where we were talking about some of the new stuff that we're going to be coming out with. And it is bold. We are putting some stuff out there that may make folks uncomfortable, not uncomfortable in their job, but just uncomfortable because of this is a big change for us as a company. And we'll talk about this on future podcast episodes. Don't worry. But I loved that our message as a leadership team could be every decision that we make, we will do to make sure that you are not negatively affected. That was our message to every other employee in the company, that you have the trust and the knowledge that when we're sitting in a leadership team meeting, we're making decisions to absolutely ensure that these employees will be positively affected. Maybe it may take several months down the road or a year down the road to make sure we see the full benefit of it, we're going to do our damnedest to get you there.
Right.
I think that to me was a pivotal moment in that conversation in that last all hands meeting.
Yeah,
I don't know if you felt the same way.
I did. And the fact that it came and I made that speech about trust.
Yeah.
And is there, because there's a little bit when you make changes, right? And we can say this, I'm not going to lie about this, not lie or try to hide it, I should say, is we're launching a new product.
Yes.
Okay.
The cat's a little bit out of the bag. It's like got its paw out.
Exactly. We're not talking about the product yet, but when we're talking about launching a product, a lot of anxiety comes up. People say, well, what's going to happen to my job? People have had job trauma where they've launched a new product and all of a sudden leadership has completely diverted everything away from the core product to the new product, which is failing, and people lose their jobs. So they say to themselves, I don't like this. This sounds kind of scary. But what I loved about it and what really made me feel strong about that meeting was that I said it's about trust. And it goes back to something we talked about in the last episode, which was the emotional bank account. We built up a lot of emotional capital that we do what's in the interest of the employees. So we look them in the eye and we say, I know this is going to be a little bit scary, but I need you to trust You have always been able to trust on the leadership team to do the right thing. And what everybody said was, you're right. We trust you guys. You have worked in our benefit the whole time, and we're going to trust that this is going to work out. And it's not going to be like it was at that last company I was at. That really warmed my heart when they said that.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal feeling when you can walk out of a meeting like that, especially as a member of the leadership team, and just have that feeling of knowing you've got their back and they trust in you, and it's for the right reasons.
Yeah,
well, for sure.
And let's just contrast that really quickly, because if you're operating under shareholder supremacy, you may have gotten some money that was going to be about putting it in the new product or whatever, and you're sitting in front of your team and you're telling them, hey, trust us, it's okay. But the investors are saying, doesn't matter. We need to cut costs no matter what, and to launch this product with as capital efficient as we can. Now, I will say we are a very capital efficient company because we are bootstrapped, but that can happen. So it's the difference that you can sit in front of your team and you can say these things because you're operating under this philosophy. Whereas if you've got shareholder supremacy on one hand, you know, to launch this new product or whatever, but you're like, I really, you know, we're an employee first company. What comes first? The shareholder supremacy, that's what's going to come first. Yeah. And decisions are going to be made. They're not going to be very good. And then the employees are going to say, see, told you, can't trust you, you know, because you're making those decisions. That's the kind of thing that ends up keeps coming back to me every single time about employee supremacy, is that it aligns the decisions of how you really want to run the company with the business decisions and what you need to do. And that all hands meeting said it right there.
Said it perfectly. Yeah. So on the topic of decisions, I want to go to a couple decisions that you've made on how we actually operate the company, things that you have brought to the company and implemented that affect all of this, that feed right into all of this. First on who actually is coming into the company, and you mentioned it, right person, right seat. And then once we have the people here, how do we operate day to day? What does our day to day look like? So let's start with bringing people in. It starts with people. You've used the phrase being maniacal about vetting who comes into the company. And we are notorious for having a very long, lengthy hiring process, but it's for a good reason. What is that reason, Andy?
Yeah, so you can't, this is critical. If you want to implement employee supremacy, this is where it all starts. And I'm going to tell a little story about the journey.
Yeah,
okay, because this is a journey that we've been on since about 2016. We were typical, chaotic entrepreneurial company where we're like, oh, okay, you run across somebody and you meet them at lunch. You're like, hey, you look like you might be a good employee for us, you know, and you hire them. And the impact that kind of decision making has been, it can be toxic. I will say toxic. Mm-hmm. You get the wrong people who are on the bus. They're not in the right seat. They're not qualified to be doing the job. So all of it for me started, well, actually it was an interesting journey because we adopted Traction, which is a book. It's the Entrepreneurial Operating System, and it's called Traction, Getting a Grip on Your Business by Gino Wickman. We adopted that around, we actually implemented it on the first meeting, January 7th of 2018. But we had to do a lot of work to get up to that point. And what Traction did for us was to give us sort of the company organizational processes. How do you run your meetings? Meetings can suck time. Sucking time means that you are basically losing money. Mm-hmm. So how do you run your meetings? What are your core values? What's your marketing strategy? And it goes much, the marketing strategy is very high level. What Michael does is a full on marketing strategy.
But you're talking about the Vision Traction Organizer,
right,
which is a two page document.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Cause everybody, well, maybe not everybody, it's kind of, I'm a little bit of a dinosaur here, but I remember the days of the 40-page business plan. And I know that I had to read through all of those in the past, and they're boring and they don't tell you really anything. And so what Traction says is you're going to do it in 2 pages. You're going to say everything in 2 pages about how your company runs. That's going to be what's your 1-year plan, what's your 3-year plan, what are your core values, all of that. And so we actually share that with our employees. And that is beautiful because they get onboarded. It's the first thing I do with every employee is go through the Vision Traction Organizer. And in 2 pages, they get it. They know where we want to go in 10 years. They know where we want to go in 3 years. They know where we want to go in 1 year. They already know about our core values. That's where we started them. So that's what Traction's done for us. Along that same journey, I ended up getting introduced to a woman by the name of Lila Blauner and a company called Scalability Solutions. And it's a sort of a hiring company that basically vets all of our candidates, does the job postings, everything. But what she's put into her practice as part of hiring for us is the ability to make sure that they don't get through the process unless they fit our core values. That's where it starts. So we'll get 100 applications. We have one question in there. And anybody who's wanting to apply to our company will get this. There's
take
one
note.
Question. Take note. There's one question. And if there isn't an authentic answer to the culture question, you won't even make it in. You'll just be automatically disqualified. And so you get 100 applications, 50 get disqualified right there. So now you're honing the pool of the applicants down to those who are going to be really good passengers on your bus. And then, of course, you go into things like, are they qualified? Do they have the experience and all of that thing? We adopted that almost the same time we did Traction. So it was the culmination of those two where our hiring practices got way better and we used Traction to sort of organize the company. And that's where we got to. I think we went up a huge level right there. We kind of leveled up and we were much better organized company. And that's where things started to really click and go forward from there.
Andy, for the leader, for the manager, for the CEO who says, look, I just got X amount of rounds of millions of dollars from my latest round from VC, and they're telling us hire, 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 now. How do they approach it in such a way that still remains true to those core values and not just, like you said, kind of settle on, well, you're a warm body and we, you know, we have a seat open for a warm body. How does somebody who, you know, we're a 20-person company, how does somebody at a 150-person company who has been told scale to 300 in the next 6 months, how do they manage that?
Well, it's going to have to come from the top. I really don't see any other way. A manager, you know, who's two levels deep below the CEO is going to have a really hard time with it. Now, they can say, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to have better hiring practices and things like that. But that's a tough one. And I think the best way to do that, and unfortunately, most of my advice is going to be like, yeah, it's really hard. You've got that $150 million and you haven't told the investors that you want to make sure you hire under employee supremacy and all that. It's going to be tough. You can go back to your investors. You could say, this is the way I want to run the company. Now, I will say this. I get inquiries probably about 3-4 times a week from venture capitalists and PE firms and some of the M&A firms as well. And I send them back. I do the same vetting process with these guys. I send them back a link to our videos about employee supremacy. And I ask them to look at it. Inevitably, 9 out of 10 of the responses will come back and say, thanks so much. I'll watch that. And I never hear from them again. Mm-hmm. So it's like they're just kind of lead generators and stuff. They're just trying to figure out, can they find somebody who wants an investment? But I'll get that one back and say, I watched it. I listened to it. That's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. Well, now I know I've got somebody. I've actually talked to a few investors. I'm not saying we're taking on investment, but I've talked to a few investors who have connected with it and say, this is a really interesting philosophy. And I'll have to ask them, you know, would that go, you know, fully throughout your firm or whatever? So the investors are out there. Another example is that there are investors who only invest in companies that have adopted the entrepreneurial operating system. Mm. One of them is called Meridian, and there's several others out there. So that basically, you can find investors who have an aligned philosophy as you do. But the difficult part is that it's hard to align with the investors you already have. Because it's almost like changing the goalposts and the investors. You brought them in one way, and now you're saying, hold on, we want to do it this way. And they may not react so well to that. So that's why, you know, I keep saying, I want to get to the entrepreneurs of today who are creating the Googles of tomorrow. Because if they can think in that philosophy and have that mind shift, they can be very focused about the discussions they have with investors. Say, this is the way we do it. If you don't like it, I totally understand. There is a lot of capital on the street. A lot of capital on the street. So there's plenty of money out there. You just got to find the right investors.
So I'd recap that as the conversation has to start sooner than it possibly is happening right now.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Depending on where the stage is and where somebody is. Yeah. Yep.
So What has the entrepreneurial operating system, the book Traction by Gino Wickman, we've talked about the infinite game in this series. What has been the outcome of us and our company and how we operate that we can say and point to those things as it's because of this?
Right. It's because of the collection of the things,
right,
in my opinion. It's organizing. If you have run a company before, if you have started another company or a serial entrepreneur, I can almost guarantee you that you have the same stories I do, which are chaos. Things are just not running well. You're having to make decisions that are incredibly difficult. There's incredible personality issues and problems with personnel. There's cash flow issues. All of these things can happen. And almost always you can lead that back to the chaos of not really having structure. And so if you have the entrepreneurial operating system, you have, with Lila, she brought something like, for instance, Michael does not have to sift through every resume for every hire, right? They're doing all the vetting. And what Scalability Solution does says, here, Michael, here are the five best candidates. We've already put them through a simulation. We've put them through all these things. That's time. It's time saved that Michael can be working on strategy and figuring out how we can do, the best marketing we can. I have that for all of the directors. So it's like bringing a level of organization. And then the other thing too is that we had the Scalability Solutions, then we had Traction, and then we found the Infinite Game. And then I kind of look at it as one is hiring, one is organizational. And then the last one, an Infinite Game, is really the cause. Why are we doing this? Because I've had people ask me, I say, we got to grow before the Infinite Game and everything else. We have to grow. And then it's actually Delin, our director of engineering and my co-founder. He basically always said to me, why? Because he's good. Everybody knows Delin. He asks questions.
Great questions.
Great questions. And why? I'm like, I don't know. We got to grow. That's just what you do, And it was flat. I was like, I don't know why. Why do we have to grow? The cause gave us something. And you hear me in the leadership meetings. I'm like, we have to grow. We have a just cause. This is why we have to. Nobody argues with me. Everybody says, you're right. We do.
Yeah. It's bigger than ourselves. And I think we all feel that. And something that you mentioned right there a little bit earlier was that you want to speak to the operators, the entrepreneurs who are building the next big companies of tomorrow. I don't know that we're ever going to get through to a Google or an Amazon,
right,
or, a Meta. We've talked about some of those in the examples of shareholder supremacy here, but you have had a lot of conversations with entrepreneurs who this has connected with. If you could say there's a common theme that these folks are interested in that you could then apply to everyone listening, everyone watching this, if there's a common theme in how you think business will look like moving forward, what would you say that is as we begin to kind of wrap things up here with this series?
People.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's people. Yeah, there's got to be a different perspective about people. People are not just there to serve the company, to enrich the shareholders. Now, again, I always say, shareholders, I'm the biggest one at this company, right? I could take this perspective. I could go to our team and I could say, you need to be working harder. You've got to stop taking days off. You need to, don't take that vacation. I want you to work harder. Why? Because I'm the biggest shareholder here and I want to get rich, right? You can't do that. I don't believe you can. In this day and age, things have changed. That might have worked in the assembly lines and things like that. But it's not going to work today. People have choices. And we're seeing this. It's very difficult to hire employees. Why? Because they have choices. So if you want to be the top company, you have to figure out, how is it that I focus on my employees? That's the only way. Because they're the ones. Are you sitting there answering chats right now? Or
I'm not.
You're not. No. I'm not answering chats. I'm not on the phone with our customers talking about sales and whether they want to buy. They are. Our employees are doing that. Well, if they're the face of the company, then you need to treat them right.
So one other thing, as we close this up, you mentioned we're a capital efficient company.
Mm-hmm.
And efficiency is used whether you're operating under employee supremacy or shareholder supremacy. But what did you mean by that? And what efficiencies are to be gained from operating under employee supremacy that no matter what you believe, everybody wants to be more efficient in business, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So what What's to be gained there?
Well, capital efficiency is throwing buckets of money at things, right? And for the most part, venture capitalists love to talk about they're a really capital efficient company, right? You want to be able to use the capital. For every dollar you invest, you want to be able to get gains out of that. There are very capital inefficient companies, you know? I mean, we talked about Better.com and stuff. I'm not saying that they're a company we should all be looking at, but, you know, they're bringing $300 million in and they're spending money like it's going out of style. Mm-hmm. That's not very capital efficient. It's the old style of like, let's hire 10 salespeople, we'll keep three and just get rid of the seven. Now, some people say that's capital efficient because it's the fastest way to get to those three salespeople, but I don't agree. You operate under employee supremacy, you figure out who you want on the bus, and you can be much more capital efficient. So if we're going to go and get capital, ever get capital in the future, I know that we're going to be incredibly capital efficient, meaning that we're not going to say, okay, we're going to go hire 10 salespeople and we're going to keep the three that work out. We're going to know that we've got a hiring process that works and we're going to run that process efficiently and get those people in the door. If you get money like equity capital, you have to get over in front of your skis. You have to spend beyond your limits because you're trying to grow faster. What I say about capital efficient is that with our new product, we are going to be capital efficient with it because we are going to make sure we get it to the marketplace. We know that the marketplace likes the new product, and then we can use our cash to make sure that we are focused on everything that needs to be done when we go out in front of our skis, when we're spending a little more than we would, maybe a lot more at times, but we're doing it knowing that it's going to succeed. Not sort of, oh, shoot, didn't work out. I guess we got to get rid of like 40 of our employees because we just hired them and it didn't work out.
Because the point is growth.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yep, exactly. That is the whole reason. You want to grow. You have to grow. We have to grow. Because everybody who watches these videos isn't going to be very interested if 10 years from now we didn't grow very much. They'd be like, oh, that was a fun little experiment. We have to grow. If we want to change the world, like we say.
Our
Just Cause says that we want to build a world. We want to build that world. We have to grow.
Absolutely. Well, Andy, this has been amazing over these last five episodes of this series, chatting with you about it. This won't be the first time or the last time, I should say, that we'll talk about this for sure. But this hopefully gives the people listening, the people watching, a great introspection into just the entire thought processes of that you've had in bringing this to not only the team here at The Receptionist, but now as we try to evangelize this out to the world. Final thoughts. Final thoughts. Bring us home, wrap this up, and let's land this bird.
I think that the final thoughts are getting the right people on the bus. Just think of our leadership meetings and how aligned we are, but yet have the opportunity to have discord and discussions about different ways to do things. That level of congruence allows us to move forward quickly. And then the people that we have in this company, I'm so proud every day that I get to work with them. So this is a model that can work. It will work. And I am positive of it.
Fantastic stuff. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this series. Share it with your friends. Share it with another business owner or leader that you know who might find some value in it. Thanks so much, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the Fabric Podcast.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Fabric Podcast. If you want to see a video version of the show, jump over to thereceptionist.com/fabric, where you can watch video episodes of all of the content that we've put out on this podcast. You can see our bright smiling faces, and you can see what our studio looks like as well. If you would like to give The Receptionist for iPad Visitor Management System a try in your office, jump over to thereceptionist.com/free trial and sign up for a free trial, no credit card required, and give us a try, see what you think. Until next time, take care.